Welcome to the Insurance Post podcast. I'm Scott McGee, news editor of Insurance Post. And today I'm joined by Jenston Insurance Brokers Martin Swan and McLaren's Nigel Collins to talk about how cyber insurance is changing. Today on the Insurance Post podcast, I'm pleased to be joined by Martin Swan, Managing Director of Financial and Professional Risk Division at Jenston Insurance Brokers, and Nigel Collins, Cyber Technology and Engineering Lead at McLaren's. They're going to share their views on how cyber insurance continues to be one of the insurance industry's fastest growing and most rapidly evolving areas of risk and exposure. Martin and Nigel, thank you very much for joining us and welcome to the Insurance Post podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Nigel, I'll start with you. How is cyber bringing equal amounts of opportunity and challenges for an underwriting business focused on portfolio performance?
Yes. I'm not an underwriter, but I can give some general comments on this. The wordings have changed quite a bit since I was initially involved in cyber, probably 8 or 9 years ago, and also the change with the Lloyd's war exclusion wording that came in last year. So that's a couple of things that have changed the scenario for both policyholders and insurers. In relation to performance, I think some insurers have been more selective on what risks they'll actually take and what sectors they'll take, and some are avoiding certain sectors totally. And the premiums certainly had increased last year and the previous year, but they seem to be stabilising at this stage.
And Martin, do you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree with what Nigel's saying. I think the evolving threat landscape has definitely expanded what insurers potentially could be on risk for from an underwriting perspective. And I think, you know, they've looked to try and be more specific around the cover they're given. And I think that's been a challenge for them. I think that's created some opportunity for other markets to come in and fill those gaps. I think, you know, Nigel alluded to the silent cyber exercise that everyone had to do following the Prudential Review, and I think there was a general misunderstanding there how much data was actually included and they were covering, and I think that's been an area where underwriters have definitely looked to be more specific in what the risks are taking on.
Have they made more progress?
So I think understanding, I think for underwriters, I think there's been evolution where they've had to understand what the value of that data is, certainly. I think recent judgments have definitely quantified that value of the data and, you know, and what data really is a concern for them. And I think they've got more sophisticated at delving into how that data is collected, processed, and, you know, and reality what their clients, what the exposure is for any one specific client for sure. So I think that's created challenges, but I think it's definitely created some opportunities for the underwriting market and in how they can, from a pricing perspective, you know, we saw some steep rises over the last few years, not just to pricing adjustments, but also down to capacity deployment and having to have more people playing on any one risk. Definitely, and that created opportunity for new markets. And
Do you feel that the insurers and maybe the market as a, you know, the cyber market as a whole is evolving at the same at an appropriate rate? When you think about the risks that are coming in and the ways in which cyber attackers are maybe trying to,
I think threats are evolving quicker. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes some insurers are being, the cover is still, you know, is still very, fairly broad in its terminology. Certainly we've seen some endorsements coming out this year which has basically crystallized the intention of cover that was already there. You know, one of the things is widespread threat and stuff, those areas where they've looked to crystallize their intention of cover and also limit the exposure. I think that's for sure. Yeah, let's be honest, I think the threats were evolving a lot quicker than maybe the modelling allowed, and you know, historically, and Nigel bet this from a loss perspective, underwriters usually look backwards for historic losses. And when you look at historic losses, some of these losses that have come out in the last few years, there isn't a model in for. So I think rates have had to react quickly in the last few years. We're definitely seeing a softening. Mm. One of the American brokers I deal with referred to it as squishy at the moment. But certainly, yeah, I think the underwriting and the products have evolved, and they definitely are evolving. I just think the threat landscape changes significantly.
And Nigel, from, you know, as Martin said, you can look at this from a loss perspective. Is that are the evolving threats and the sophistication of cyber attacks meaning that we are seeing much larger losses and more widespread losses?
Yes, certainly, and I would agree with what Martin has said. Looking back isn't always necessarily in relation to cyber the way forward. The threats are continuing to evolve. The threat actors are always one step ahead, coming up with new and innovative ways of getting into systems and perpetrating their attack, whether that be in the traditional ransomware type attack or the ever-increasing cyber crime or misappropriation of money type attacks. So it's continuing to evolve, and it's trying to keep up to date. You're never going to get ahead of the cyber criminals, because they're just always one step ahead.
But and with the new, you know, AI was a big element and of last year, and we've heard about you know, cyber criminals trying to use AI to make them more make their attacks more efficient and more kind of hard hitting. How is that another thing just coming on top, in which insurers and businesses who might be targeted have to look out for?
Yes, in relation to the wording of emails and how the cyber criminals would have socially engineered or perpetrated the attack, getting into the business via email communication or social media communications, whatever, with using AI, they can obviously get the wording better and right. So that's a factor. And then the other factor with AI is deep fakes, where basically AI is replicating even voice of, say, a finance director or CEO of a business, and they're faking calls through this medium.
Mm.
I think you know, AI is an area of risk which both consumers, brokers, underwriters, and the loss adjusting market and those people dealing with the claims, we have to keep an open mind, let's say, about how we and understanding on that. I think AI is becoming certainly more involved in everyday life, especially in the tech space. I think AI is becoming a tool which people may revert to help, you know, help with them hitting their deadlines and stuff. And I think there's areas there where, you know, I think that's not always present in the data collation that underwriters will do as part of their onboarding of a client and assessing a risk. And I think certainly, you know, AI utilized within services is an area where there's a lot of focus from an underwriting appetite, for sure. I think, you know, the whole cyber threat landscape, I think the whole contraction, expansion, appetite around coverage, I think that creates, it's, you know, not just the underwriting losses broken, I think it creates some real challenges and opportunities for the consumers as well. You know, certainly from a contracting perspective, you know, whether it be supplier or vendor management, we've definitely seen an expansion on the language around cyber resilience, cyber indemnities, and contractually assumed cyber expenses. And I think that creates challenges for businesses that maybe aren't sophisticated enough. It, you know, sometimes we see requirements for coverage which is just, you know, misunderstood and way beyond the scope of what is affordable for you know, some businesses. And I think there's a definitely a variation in what we see there between, you know, SME signing a contract with a large, you know, government-owned or, you know, authority-based backed vehicle to the more sophisticated buyers that know exactly what they want covering within their vendors and their supply chain. So I think those challenges are quite good, are quite difficult, but I also think it creates an opportunity for businesses when they're having these restrictions imposed by underwriters or these restrictions imposed by, you know, their vendors or their suppliers around cyber resilience. I think it creates an opportunity for them to become more cyber secure, to embed more sophisticated training, more sophisticated employee awareness, and, you know, opportunity to de-risk their business for sure. So, yeah, I think some of the opportunities and challenges are more than just the risk transfer.
Yeah,
there's definitely some that can improve, you know, general business process.
So, Nigel, you said earlier that insurers are never, and you know, businesses are never going to get ahead of this. So, it sounds like it's an uphill battle. How does the industry, you know, the insurance industry, and also businesses and consumers and the buyers of this insurance, how do they prepare themselves as much as possible to alleviate those losses and to make sure that if a cyber criminal does try to get into their system, they're doing as much as they possibly can to stop that?
Yeah, I think we have to go back to basics to a certain extent and understand that insurance or cyber insurance isn't the panacea that people think it is. It's one method in transferring the risk, and I emphasise one method. Yeah, they have to buy in from the actual the policyholder, the actual company that are seeking the cover, and more importantly, buy in from board level down, you know, to make sure that the risk has been transferred partly by or to the insurance, but also the business is taking on the risk as well, and transferring that risk via other means as well as insurance. That could be by increasing spend on their cyber security, for instance, training of their staff, other methods to transfer that risk. There has to be an ownership and buy-in right from board level down to all staff members, and a staff training as well. You can have the best cyber security products in place and spend hundreds of thousands or millions of pounds on products, and all it takes is that one member of staff to click on that spurious link or a supplier be attacked, and that can cause issues as well.
I think we've had examples of that within the insurance industry. I can't remember the name of the company. It eludes me at the moment, but they suffered a cyber attack in the last few years, and I think it was confirmed that was from just an employee clicking on one of those emails, and then the hackers had access to thousands of bits of data. So it's both you know, businesses, but also it's the insurance industry as well. The industry has to make sure that they are as cyber secure as possible. I mean, we've got like I was just saying, we've got examples of insurance companies suffering from cyber attacks. Mm. So if for a company trying to sell insurance, how important is it that they are the experts and that they have a clean track record of fighting off these attacks?
Oh, I think I absolutely agree. The weakest point of any business is its employees.
Mm-hmm.
I do know which insurance company you're referring to, and I'm not going to name it in case any of my friends that work there call me out. You know, we talk a lot at Jenston about, when you're talking about cyber, about the process with any client is understand, mitigate, transfer. And I think the first point there is really important, is understanding not only what the exposures are, understanding what coverage is available, and then working out what, and Nigel talked about ownership, about mitigation of the risk. You know, what factors do you control? How, you know, what changes can you make within your business to mitigate the amount of risk you need to transfer onto a cyber insurance policy. You know, employee ownership is a really good point that Nigel made, and I think some of the best businesses we work with, they have, you know, cyber champions that go right the way down to the granular level of service facing, you know, and customer facing employees. So you need that buy-in, you need that ownership, you need to regularly test your ship, you know, look for your vulnerabilities, get other people to look at your vulnerabilities. So that whole understanding and mitigating before you look at what risk you want to transfer is a really important step in the process. But likewise, it's the understanding around, we talk a lot about the understanding of the coverage you're buying, and more important, the coverage you're not buying, understanding where the line in the sand is, and how to use it. So I think, one of the challenges I think the insurance broking market faces is, you know, there is a large amount of variation now between cyber products, cyber insurance products, and I think it's hard, I think, for brokers who aren't trading this every day. So for people that are not working within some of the more sophisticated cyber specialist teams who are not trading this every day, to keep abreast of all those variations of cover. So I think, you know, very much like we as consumers need to understand, I think there needs to be an ownership and an investment at, you know, customer facing level from us as brokers. We need to take some accountability and ownership to try and stay abreast of those changes and try and be confident in the advice we're giving and the identification of any one product for the customer's needs. Look at the insurance market now. You know, I think a lot of insurers are coming to a landing on, you know, what coverage they actually want to give. And until recently, pricing was only going one way, but we're definitely seeing a softening of rates with more capacity coming in. I think a lot of insurers were looking at value-add products, you know, things they're bringing in to help their clients mitigate their losses. I think gone are the days where if we go back 3 years ago, you know, the one thing all most insurers did to encourage good behaviours in regards to mitigation of a cyber risk was, if you tell us within 72 hours, we'll waive your excess. Well, I think a few caught a cold with that, and now they'll do things like they'll embed within their cyber product, you know, third-party screening, they'll embed training, they'll embed, you know, updates, they'll do remote threat testing themselves. So I think those value-added products for customers, it's understanding what each product has and then the benefit to your customer and passing that on. So I certainly think, you know, there has to be more ownership across the piece around education, you know, so understanding, mitigation.
Could then go from there. Could a case be made for, I mean, if we look outside of cyber, there are elements of insurance where there is kind of like a minimum level of what a policy provides. Could that be some, because cyber is still seen as a very fairly young young market, because what is it, it's about 20-25 years old, maybe, shall we say, so it's still in its infancy, so could there be a case for some kind of framework where you know, any provider of cyber insurance that has this minimum level of service, and this is the minimum of what that policy will provide. I'm sure that will make your job a lot easier as a broker.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it'd be great. If you had a standardised product, yeah, and then it became a price play, you know, that's great in one way for understanding. But I think one of the great things about the cyber market at the moment is the ingenuity that's happening. So the moment you standardise something, the moment you stifle in innovation and ingenuity. And I think one of the great things at the moment, one of the things that I certainly enjoy, and the guys within my team that specialise in cyber, we really enjoy getting to know the products, getting to know, and that's the fun part of being a cyber broker, for sure. I think, yeah, if we had a standardised product, it would make it very simple in some ways, but it would also, I don't see how it would work, because quite often, let's look at another market that's not as old as others, the D&O market. You know, previously D&O was, you know, a very infantile market. It started with a very simple cover, you know, individual side A, you know, and company reimbursement side B, and if you had need for it, then you go on to, you know, the IPO type side C cover. I think that evolved massively especially with the regeneration of the Companies Act, which brought in some of the exposures for the entity that maybe were just limited to the individuals originally. And out of that came management liability, and that went through a whole thing where, you know, before COVID, you'd have any one claim across three separate towers with excess waivers and all this great, fantastic value add-ins. And then as soon as claims start being paid, you know, capacity is restricted, appetite's restricted, coverage is cut back. So I think the market dictates, based against losses, where it is. And the D&O market now has kind of come back to a place where, yeah, you can still get management liability products. You still get that portfolio-based coverage, but it's not as crazy as it was 3 or 4 years ago. No. And I think cyber will go through the same evolution. I think the one thing that is being standardised across carriers, and the one thing that is being standardised across certainly the underwriters that we talk about, is the minimum benchmark for acceptance of a risk. And I think that in itself will help. You know, years ago it was a statement of fact, you had to just confirm you had a password that changed every 6 weeks and this, that and the other. And it was, now, you know, MFA is a prerequisite for any client, you know, with most decent carriers. And I think those things will dictate an evolution of the consumer and the purchaser of cyber cover. And then I think cyber will, once it gets, you know, it will find a standardized level where most people will trade, and you'll have some people that will trade under the radar for cost pricing and for entry level products, and some that will give far more cover than, you know, but you'll pay a ticket for it. So,
Nigel, we've got, you know, looking forward to, you know, the next 12 months of 2024, with what Martin's said about looking ahead and everything and about that evolution of it, what do you see happening over the next 12 months in terms of a loss side of things? Obviously working for McLaren's.
I think, you know, I have to understand to a certain extent as to the purpose of the cyber criminals and the attack that they're going to perpetrate. I suppose long gone are the days where that perception of a spotty teenager in a darkened basement in front of a computer screen working away is long gone. You know, cyber criminals and hacking groups are now run as professional, and I say that in the loosest sense, organisations in offices and employing the best hackers and the best staff and the best negotiators. So we have to take that into account as well. But I think over the next 12 months, we're going to see quite a steep rise in cybercrime, where social engineering comes into how that's actually perpetrated. It has been increasing, amounts have increased in frequencies, increased in how the hackers are actually doing it. And I think the ransomware attacks will also be maintained and increased with new hackers and new groups coming into the arena, and splits even in certain hacking groups as well. One important factor as well is that you can, as a business, think that you're absolutely secure and you've all the measures in place, you have your staff training, etc. But if you have a vendor supplier that works with you, so even a software supplier that have access to your systems, that could be a back door for hackers. And that's what the hackers are looking for. They're looking for that systemic attack vector where they can attack one particular company, a software or software as a service vendor, and it can have multiple actual attacks on individuals as a result of that. So that's where I see things going, where they want to monetize that aspect.
So you're seeing, so the example I can think of is the MoveIt data hack of last year.
Yeah.
You know, that hit a lot of different companies, Aon being one of them. We reported that Aon was affected by that as well, but that, you know, the hackers got the one bit of software and were able to infiltrate, you know, so many other different companies as a result, more of kind of well-known companies, but it was just kind of a supplier that they infiltrated. Martin, same question. You from your perspective, where do you you know, you might have already kind of elaborated on this, but over the next 12 months, where do you see the cyber market kind of evolving? And if we were to have this conversation again in 12 months, what would you have seen happen over the next 12 months?
So I agree with both the points you guys have made. Sorry, the points both you guys have made is that, you know, an area that was quite high on the claims feedback, the stats I've seen, and we're talking underwriters, was that supply chain attack. They just look at the statistics I gathered ahead of this podcast. It was the thing that I found. It said 44% of claims were supply chain in 2023, and that's an area where underwriters are definitely put more focus around that supply chain management and the contractual area, you know, contracting around that. Certainly, you know, if you're a SaaS provider and you have, you know, a contractual indemnity to provide a safe network environment and to maintain those duties to around that, you know, that has some exposure there if that's where the cyber criminals are focusing at the moment to take that out. I think, you know, and underwriters are putting more focus there around how that data segregated, how you're minimising that. So I think we'll see that trend continue definitely in 2024. I think at the moment, I think rates have started 24 similar to they finished 23, definitely. So I think we'll still see some regression of the increases definitely that we've seen. But there's also a focus, I think, around any business which is heavily invested with AI. And I think we'll see some new language coming to market from the conversations I've certainly had around AI, where it's used in SaaS-based products or the development of code around SaaS-based products as well. I think insurers are definitely, you know, I was in a meeting last week and with a business that's developing its own AI, and a lot of the questions in the room were focused around, you know, what indemnities are you giving, you know, what warnings, health warnings are you giving around AI where your customers may be utilising that new functionality. I think that's an area where the underwriting market will definitely put more focus. And are we putting those caveat emptor type exclusions in our contracts? You know, we're warning you about this, beware, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a bill, which I obviously one of the things that ChatGPT have added recently, haven't they, the caveat emptor type catch all at the end.
it's an interesting area. It's fast evolving, as we've all kind of alluded to. That's everything. Thank you very much for your time. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Insurance Post podcast. I'd like to thank Martin and Nigel for taking the time and joining us and sharing their insight on cyber insurance. As always, also thanks to you for listening to the Insurance Post podcast. If you enjoy our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to Insurance Post and following us on Facebook, LinkedIn and X. Make sure you come back next week for a discussion on Blueprint 2. Until then, this is Scott McGee signing off. The Insurance Post podcast is a product of InfoPro Digital.